What Happened with St. George by David Cregan. With Ian Holm as the man, Peter Davison as George, and Kenneth Cranham as the dragon. Stockholm, Sweden, the present.
And here then is the celebrated statue of St. George and the dragon, carved in wood in the 15th century, with the original paint still preserved. St. George is here represented as the saviour of Sweden from the domination of Denmark, an event you can see also recorded in our Stadhus, or town hall, where we give out the Nobel Prizes, in the bell tower there.
Is this your first visit to Stockholm?
It's a really cheap pickup, especially in a cathedral.
You like Sweden?
Yeah, it's calm and cool. The trees and water really speak to me.
Not the blood.
What?
There it comes, pouring from the dragon. Or more terribly, there comes the agony and the screams you see in his eyes, his neck muscles, his claws, trying to rid himself of the horse.
He's a real mean dragon.
He's actual.
Oh, come on.
Look at the spear going through the neck. In the pictures of the myth, that goes through the mouth and throat.
Symbolic of sex, of course.
Oh.
Sex is what this conversation's leading to, isn't it?
Of course not.
You English always pretend.
Well, that dragon is not sex. Not unless you confuse sex with hunger. And you seem too graceful to do that.
Surely, one of the interpretations of the George
this
myth...
This statue is about the Danes being driven out of Stockholm by young Sweden in the 15th century, and that is typical of what people think and feel about St. George.
I think psychoanalysis
he
has
shown... He came in and clobbered the enemy, sent them away humiliated, and saved the day for the righteous. That's what everybody thinks, or is expected to think. Look at him. His face has the tense pallor of the mercenary or missionary, same thing. Look how he holds his sword in both hands over his head for the death blow while gazing. Look, gazing, straight ahead. The animal below him is beneath his mighty Puritan contempt.
Or too attractive?
Oh, you're full of knowing hints, aren't you? American postgraduate, post-Kinsey, post-innocent, permanently post-coital.
I'm just very aware.
Oh, I see.
And you don't have to talk to me.
Yes, I do.
Look at those skulls and arms and legs he hasn't eaten. He toys with flesh.
St. George?
No, the...
Do you want to be alone with him?
You like him, the dragon?
I like George. I feel immense sorrow for George. He was turned into a myth before his time.
You're an academic.
I'm a lecher. You're quite right, but only incidentally. I'm 54. How old are you?
32.
Oh. I have to tell you the story of St. George, though. It's all recorded, the whole thing, but repeated quite falsely so that even sophisticated girls like you get it wrong.
Sophisticated?
That's why I must tell you. To break the shell.
If you've finished with the statue, we can now move on to the remarkable candelabra.
Look, come over here.
What? You'll
be quite safe. Everyone can see us. George's parents were just plain folks from Cappadocia. Turkey, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
But they happened to be converts to Christianity at a crucial time. The Roman Empire had made all its property laws, protection arrangements, and... Oh, it invented words like decimate, but it was slowly, surely collapsing. It turned out, therefore, that George's parents were part of a sea change in the way the world was thinking. Might was beginning not to be right. They didn't realize it, of course. Who would, with Christians being stoned to death so frequently?
Stop!
Stay back, George.
But it's terrible, Father! Oh, they've taken all his clothes off! You can see everything!
Sometimes they bury them up to their shoulders first.
Don't you like us Romans then, sonny?
No!
You watch and learn, then. You native parents, I blame you. Tell him to think the way the Emperor likes.
In that case, they only hit the head, and it's quicker.
It'll be all right, George. Our Lord will receive him into paradise.
You're sure of that?
Absolutely.
God's love, the mercy of Jesus, the mercy of his mother.
That's it.
He's happy now.
Yes?
Everybody understand what happened to Christians?
Will they do that to us?
Possibly.
Not to me, they won't. I'm not brave enough.
You can't say no to the truth, George.
I can if it hurts. Look at the ravens. His eyes. His parts, Mother.
He doesn't need them now, dear.
But couldn't they bury him?
Christians know better than that. As Christians, we know that once the body dies, it's finished, and the real part of you goes to heaven.
Oh, don't tell me the body isn't real. Those birds know it's real, and they're enjoying it. The soldiers knew it was real when they stoned him. They enjoyed it. And he knew it was real because it hurt.
Right, strip the next man.
Right, you, come on in.
How awful.
Yes. Now, the dragon. The dragon was born long before George, long before Christ. It was an ancient dragon that grew in the sand. Its egg was buried in the desert, laid years before and heated by the sun of North Africa. It had a dry, tetchy birth. All alone, with no one to care, and no smile to answer the longing for safety, nor food offered by a mother creature. It was a horrible time and place in which to be born. The sand blew into the lidless, protruding eyes. The heat poured onto the scales. And there was an ache for sustenance, for encouragement. Only the awful demand to go on living was there. And the dragon obeyed nothing else. It felt how it looked, ugly and determined. As it shook its wings and stamped in anger, it accidentally put its foot on a desert rat. The thin comfort of the claw entering the fur and then the soft flesh was the only positive sensation the young dragon knew that day. Bending to see what it was, with its painful, unfocusing eyes, it came close and bit, like all young things, and sucked. And felt better. From then on, it never stopped. He was monstrous and meaningless, because he was and always had been from the start. Unloved, and therefore always hungry. But in Cappadocia, George was simply frightened.
Frightened?
It's crucial that you understand that. He was a young boy, alarmed, who used to talk to himself in bed and sometimes cry.
I'm scared. I don't believe I'm going to get a better deal in heaven. Father says, George, there's nothing to fear because God promised us. Who's God? All right, crucified, that was God, so he knows it hurts to die. So he should do all he can to spare us. If, of course, the story's true. You need faith to think it's true when you're facing death by stones or having ravens peck your private parts. Yes, well, I don't have faith. I'm a thorough coward, scared to death and proud of it. I'm only 16, so I have lots of wonderful experience ahead of me. My teachers say I'll learn to love the colours of the sea and mountains, the sounds of winds and the smells of wild, sticky flowers on the hills. I know because I'm preoccupied with them already that I'll softly brush the lips of girls and be in love. Jumping, dancing love, the love that knows another person as completely as it's possible to do, each inch and follicle end. So what is there for me in dying in painful bits with a promise of perfumed everlasting clouds? I love. I actually adore my body because it is the instrument of life. I will not give it up to stones or swords or have it torn apart because of faith.
Aren't you going to sleep, George?
Yes, Mother.
Then who are you talking to?
No one important, only myself.
You said you were a coward.
You'd rather I was brave and dead?
Faithful, George.
You don't want me to live.
You can't give in to evil. You'll become a slave.
Better a slave than a grave.
Oh, George.
You want me dead. Oh. Yes! You want me to believe things and die. Oh, Mother, Mummy, please say you want me living.
Of course I do.
Then let me be a coward. I want to love you and be loved alive and cuddled.
There are better things than that.
Of course there aren't. That's why when they punish you, they hurt your body. They know caressing is the only thing we really want, and so they hurt us.
Oh, George, you never try to understand.
I will if you explain.
Everything's better when you're dead. The other religions have got it all wrong, you see. Now go back to sleep and forget about it.
Forget about dying?
Yes, George.
Don't put your hand there, George.
Then don't lean back on it.
Go further then. Oh, George, I do love you.
Do you believe God knows about love?
Oh, I believe your fingers do. I want to see you naked.
I said this conversation was about sex.
I wish it were as much as you do, but it isn't.
As much as I do?
If it were about sex, there'd be no commitment. Only bodily fluids. But there's love and compassion. So listen.
I love you, Alison. Your angles are perfect and you make me warm.
I love your pale skin. It shines.
And the sky's blue and the hills are blue. And the sea down there is blue. We're utterly happy, I think.
Oh, we're perfect.
But, oh, I feel a sense of ugliness coming on.
Oh, no. You're pretty. And your blonde hair is loved by everyone.
But I feel ugly.
Who makes you feel like that?
We converts say that Adam does, don't we? We say Eve was awful.
She was great.
The witch seducer.
Do you think I should feel guilty at making the sky blue, making you love my fur, bringing us into all this sunlight like two porpoises?
No, but the point about Jesus is I should, so he can save me and give me everlasting life, especially if I die in agony for him.
I sometimes wish we were just animals. Loving each other without...
Oh, heavens, no. The animals are brutally conformist. One three-legged seagull and they're in there like the 10th Legion, pecking it to death. That's the good thing about Christianity, Alison. Quite close to its centre is the great law that says we must not peck another human being to death. Even better is the law that says, love ye one another. Oh, my beautiful Alison. And then you're asked to die in awful pain for it.
Kiss me, George. And don't pretend it's all my fault, because it isn't.
Love ye one another. Oh, one another.
Oh.
Why are you telling me this?
Because of the way you look. George's love affair didn't help him. Alison was summoned to the Cappadocian Christian Action Committee. The underground, catacombs and everything.
It's very simple. He doesn't like pain. And he does like making love.
As I thought. Do you follow my idea, brothers?
No.
Estes?
Don't use names.
The point is that as a member of the Christian community, George had no business yielding to Alison at all. And she had no business to lead him on.
I didn't lead him. He was very gentle. Like the Gospels say, and so was I, and we loved one another.
Exactly. On that evidence, you see, he sounds as if he might just have the kind of defect we could use.
There were no defects.
If, as we've decided, haven't we, Estes, that there's a place in Christ's religion for the Christian soldier, then you'd think he'd have to be more than usually strong and devoted.
Why?
Well, if the rest of us are going to be meek without being martyred, we're going to need a very committed protector to allow for it.
Oh, we're recruiting an army.
We are finding a hero, which is quite different.
But surely we don't want one with a defect.
But that's the point. Alison says that George is gentle, and most importantly, a coward.
Yes.
And people who are cowards are poor material for martyrdom, Estes.
Names.
They don't like being nailed to things. arms. Therefore, there's just a possibility that this one could be trained to save his skin by fighting. And thus save our skins as well.
I don't want that.
Oh, clever, clever.
And as a coward, he's likely to remain meek in his behaviour. Just the sort of person our Lord demands. Suffering little children and that sort of thing.
Gentle.
You needn't say anything of this to George just yet, Alison.
Oh?
Don't want him to get into trouble with the stoning squads, who are out and about again.
Keep at it, lads!
Confess, Father, before it's your turn. Tell them anything they want to know. Say the Emperor's wonderful and you love his lipstick.
They don't want to know anything. It's local prejudice because of depressed fish prices.
But they're going to take you next. I don't want a dead father. I want a living father.
But not a shameful father?
Yes, if he's alive.
No. Courage is everything, George. The world won't grow gentle without courage.
Oh! Next!
No!
Strip it!
No!
No! Be good, my son. Look after your mother.
Oh! Hurry along! Martyrdom for all!
No!
Father!
Be strong and of a good courage.
Father! All defend us. Lord, give us strength.
You fool, Father!
Are we right to turn the other cheek?
Yes!
Yeah! Oh! I'll give us strength, Mother. They won't forget my father.
So George was sent off to be trained as a soldier.
Hmm.
It's hard to believe, but typical of the whole thing, that he was trained by none other than the Blessed Virgin Mary.
What?
The story's quite precise about this. Here she was in the 3rd century AD, still alive, but not where one expected.
George, I suppose.
Yes, ma'am.
People call me Holy Mother.
But you're furious.
I lost a son, didn't I? I watched him hang in the heat and fed him wormwood. It was love he died for. If we don't believe in love, there's no hope. So we must all love one another, mustn't we? Even if we have to die, which my poor boy did like your father, for love. Eh? Love. I tell you, love. They died for love.
Are you all right?
No. Love suffereth long and goes mad.
To me, love is quick, like a trout in sunshine.
Oh, sensual and young. But suppose someone kills your trout. If a whole order murders your trout, then what, George? Remember your father?
I want revenge for that.
And I will teach you how to get it in the name of love, which politicians, all of them, is what they've asked me to do.
Don't talk of love, because I'm sure you don't know what it is.
I
know! You don't know how it goes into the heart of you and makes the world a different place. You're dried up, and I'll bet you always have been.
When you lose people, you become saltless and insupportable. You know that now.
Losing my father. Being sent away from Alison. Away from home. Yes, all right.
You'll fight for your father and Alison.
In saltless anger.
Righteous anger, they call it.
I'll learn what you teach me.
Good. We'll go down to the courtyard right away.
But my reasons will always be private, Holy Mother.
Oh, we know the reasons, you and I. We were both torn apart by something no one thought important. Grief.
So George became that terrible compromise, a Christian soldier and everybody's favourite saint. Alison hated it when he came home for the holidays.
I love you. Come on.
It's all done by numbers now.
Of course not. I love you just as much as I ever did, with the same quickness and delight. Come on.
But not the skill.
Lie down.
Oh, your love used to come through the tips of your finger. Ow. But now it's just a lot of pent-up soldier. Stop it and get off.
Look, I'm learning to defend you. I don't want to in the least, because I hate the idea of being dependable and strong. Not even being built for it. Blonde hair, wasp waist, pale skin. But I'm learning so that the tender parts of Christianity, especially the bits of it like you and Mother, don't get wiped out by the idiotic Romans. At some stage, I will fight a battle to make the Emperor take notice and say, ah, well, okay, you believe in what you want and I won't interfere. And then perhaps I can give it all up and go back to being a simple man who likes caressing you to the point of godlike cries. In the meantime, I have to hang on to my military character as well as my love, so let's go to it like a good pair of legionnaires.
It's no fun when you're being military.
Alison, please.
No!
And that was that. George went back to his teacher, very cynical indeed.
I think there's no such thing as love!
Love and gentleness, George, are things of the spirit, and are therefore virtues. Things not of the spirit but of the body are not virtues, but encumbrances, and should be ignored.
Then why am I learning to fight? Fighting isn't of the spirit, it's about bodies and cutting them up.
In defending a virtue, you borrow that virtue and make it your own for the time being. Thus, fighting for love and gentleness means that for a while, fighting itself becomes lovable and gentle.
It's the other way around. Love and gentleness turn to violence when you fight, and you know that very well, Holy Mother.
Of course I know it. I've spent 2 centuries trying to believe what I know isn't true, that the body doesn't matter and the tears don't hurt. But they do. It's in the body that love and gentleness exist. The presence, the darling presence, is all we have. And if it weren't, I could bear the death of my only begotten son without all this paraphernalia of faith to try to make me feel at one with something big and distant and everlasting, so comfortable in my partial deformed life which he left me with. But the fact is, I hugged that boy. He sat on my knee, he slept on my shoulder, I knew the smell of him. I held his hand when I was happy. I jumped up whenever he came home and he ran into my arms. And as he grew up, I argued with him, shouted at him, and he at me. His presence brought all that about, his physical presence. And if it hadn't been, if there'd been no body, there would have been no love, and certainly no grief. It's fear of grief that makes so many people frightened of the body, George. The body is so wonderful they dare risk understanding it. It gives us our whole joy with magical senses, our whole fear with our knowledge of pain, our power over others whom we can hurt, and so our cruelty. Oh, it's our presence that matters and needs so much to be respected. That's what you really fight for, George. Respect of presences. That's what he fought for too, I think. But people somehow only think in myths, and myths are not about presences or facts. We haven't got that clear, that love of fact, of parts that add up to so much. And so you will have to become a myth and fight not for the presence, which is people, but for the good, which is an opinion.
Why must I do that?
Because at least you'll be thought of as defending more or less the weak, which is better than nothing, if very open to manipulation. For example, there's a dragon heading for North Africa. I've promised the powers that be you'll go and kill. Dragons, like the good, can mean anything you want. But just remember, it's for respect of the presence that I'm really training you.
Pretty soon, he was called on by the Cappadocian Christian Action Committee to do the practical thing they had wanted of him from the start.
There's another bout of stoning, George.
We're calling him George right out, are we?
The Defender of the Cross.
Peoples? Defender of the Cross?
No. George's father was rich.
Come on, he was a simple market gardener.
A rich landowner who converted to the cross and gave all he had to the poor.
Oh, lovely.
Yes.
A true Christian background.
I am indeed a Christian, and I understand the political difficulties of bringing about a world in which people love their neighbours as themselves. However, I am not and never have been rich and resent being used to oversimplify anything further than I already do. Now, if you want me to fight...
Today, actually.
What?
Diocletian's birthday. Since he became emperor, he's decreed that Christians are his favourite present. He sets lights to them in the Colosseum for the evening performance with the lions.
Oh, Lord, save the world from madmen.
Yes, well, that's your job, noble knight of the cross. There's a horse waiting for you.
The other man had a donkey.
Not a lot of good for defeating the Roman Empire, whatever it did symbolically. And this will train George for the great confrontation his teacher says is coming up in Africa.
That's going to be symbolic too.
But rather different.
Stoning squad! Halt! Right! Let's have the first! You!
Oh, Father! Lord in heaven! Hallowed be thy name!
Come on! Put him in the circle! Right! right. And everyone shout happy birthday, Diocletian. Come on.
Happy birthday, Diocletian.
Well, all right. Squad, start. Stoney.
Stop.
Hey, push it.
I am the noble arm of Christ.
The arm?
The arm of justice.
Huh?
The arm of victory.
He's taken the centurion's head off like a boiled egg.
Yeah! Don't run away, young soldier. I want you.
Why?
Because I'm the noble knight of the cross. Ah! And the blood of Rome will be remembered forever on my field. It stains the cross of St. George, defender of the weak. Next.
It went to his head, of course, defending the weak. Or, in this case, revenge. That most corrosive of the pleasures.
You scare me.
Really? Well, George kept Cappadocia safe for the Christians for a bit.
He's wonderful.
Remarkable.
Of course, we must reward him.
No. The point is that he does it all for love. He defends the underprivileged, the Christians, us. And he does it all for love.
What happens if we become the privileged? Suppose there's a Christian emperor and we get the kingdom of God.
We'll have to dump him as a terrorist. However, at the moment...
Reprisals! One man in every 10 to present himself for execution at the stoning ground!
Come on, then.
One man in every 10 on foot, please! I said...
Next! 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 Next!
We're very proud of you, George, but we hardly ever see you.
All this was your idea, Mother, sending me away from home to be a saviour of the world.
It's what your father would have wanted. But Alison and I do miss you.
I don't love you at all now.
Oh.
And so to the dragon. The non-Christian, non-heathen, simply loveless dragon, who had nothing against anyone in ideological terms at all. When he entered the story from the desert, he was old with wandering the sand. Old with blood, with furious, all-consuming, but extremely limited conquests. And he was hungry. That was the main thing about him. He was hungry, especially now, for loved flesh, kissed and nurtured flesh, grown warm and strong at its mother's side flesh, real flesh. He longed, in truth, for what he wasn't and never had been, a piece of loved humanity. So he howled for the primitive magic that he hoped would make him whole, to kill and eat what was young and treasured so that he could be young and treasured too. He flew to the shores of Cyllene, ferocious and stinking and quivering, and bellowed to the wall of the city of Tobruk.
Bring me babies, children, virgin girls, juice every day, human juice to thrive on.
And the king of Cyllene was horrified.
Did you know this thing was coming?
Well, we did have reports that it was heading out of the desert, Your Majesty. Reports from Arab traders.
And you did nothing?
What could we do?
Throw javelins at it.
It's impervious to all missiles. The Arab traders say the ancient cities of Africa have tried all that.
So what do you suggest?
Give him what he wants and he'll go away.
You'll organise that, will you?
Me?
Collect the babies, children, virgin girls.
Oh, I can't.
Exactly. We'll have a revolution on our hands. It happened to us before in Egypt. Locusts, death of the firstborn.
Let's call a meeting of the city fathers. Spread the blame.
They came in grave procession to the palace. And from the shore, the dragon rose and flew over the city, crying...
Take away the old men! I want young flesh! Give me love!
Gentlemen, you've heard the demands. Demands for your grandchildren. The threat is real. The dragon is real. What are we to do?
We could follow custom and draw lots. Those with low numbers lose their grandchildren first.
Hello?
Excuse me, Father.
Oh, heavens, my daughter Cleodelinda. This really isn't the
time. I would like to offer myself as a sacrifice to this beast.
Like?
Well, you couldn't fight.
I could, and I do. Father, he wants the blood and body of a loving girl. I am that.
Have you seen him?
Yes.
He's foul. I know you have a passion for self-sacrifice.
It's the only reasonable thing to do.
You're engaged to Sylvanus, who is young, handsome, and will run the country well. Your lips have been celebrated by him in verse.
Sylvanus?
Yes?
Have you seen the dragon?
Yes. And I can't permit you to deliver yourself to that.
You'll kill it.
What? Well...
I believe that only I can defeat him. If you will have me, then I can make him promise to go away.
A dragon will promise anything.
You can't do it. What else is there?
Yes.
I thought you all loved her.
We do. But since we're all going to die if he doesn't get what he wants...
I suppose she is a virgin.
Of course I am.
She's always interfering.
She's offering.
Yes.
I love our people, Father, and the city where I grew up. Giving my life is such a simple way to show that love, and much more satisfying than marrying Sylvanus.
Oh.
Let me speak to the monster.
Well, if you really think he'll leave us, you might suggest he tries Rome next.
Cleodelinda. Cleodelinda. Such a lovely name. Like a glass of water. And she meant to be so noble.
Only meant?
She tricked the dragon.
Food! Young and lovely!
Not yet!
No.
I carry poison all over my body. If you eat me, you will die very slowly and painfully. Do you like the way I look?
Yes.
Do you want me more than anything else you've ever had?
Yes.
I taste of all the salts of the earth and all the fishes of the sea. My blood is cream. My skin, the frailest tegument your teeth could puncture. And my meat is almost fluid to your tongue. Will you enjoy that?
Yes.
And in my death, I'll give you such kindness, such pleasuring care, that you'll grow young and lovely. Will that be what you want?
Oh, yes.
Yes. Then you must promise me... that you will leave this city after you've eaten me. If you don't, you will die old and ugly and in great pain. They will all carry the poison, the people you try for here after me.
And if I promise, I can have you.
So that you know I'm truthful, I'll come to you naked tomorrow in the early morning. With a fresh sun shining on every surface. Then you'll know who it is you're eating. Say you agree, so that I can go back to the gentle people I grew up with and tell them they're safe.
I must wait.
Or die.
I've never waited.
Well, you must now.
Was there any poison?
No.
Ah.
There's no evidence that she knew George was coming. But she did insist the dragon wait all night for her. Of course, she wanted to be eaten as a ceremony. And the early morning has always been the best time for that. She wanted ecstasy in her death. It isn't clear who gave the orders for George to be transported to Cyllene. But it was his teacher who was granted special powers to get him there, to carry out the great confrontation by which righteous murder could enter Christian morality.
George, you have to stop killing Romans.
I like it.
Too much. The time has come for mythology. You must go and save this girl. By fighting this poor dragon, who admittedly has nothing against you, nor against us, the Church, you will become that greatest, and to some people that most youthful ambiguity of all, a symbol. You will be the symbol of strength and humility, whatever that is. And also of goodness, usually Christian, so everyone in future will be able to fight just wars.
Am I being used?
We both are. But for my sake, save this girl from killing herself for lack of love, George. You've been loved. Do you remember what it was like?
Yes, I do.
Beautiful. Painful in its consequences, but gentle, George.
Holy Mother, I might forget everything you've taught me if you aren't quiet. I'll go and be a symbol if I must.
The soft southern dawn came up, and Cleodelinda stood on the palace balcony, naked to the morning breeze. Below, she was surprised to see the pale hair, pale face, pale horse, pale everything except the black armour and red cross, of George, proud and smirking.
Everyone's supposed to be indoors. My body is secret.
I'm here to save you.
I don't want that!
Trouble, my dear.
Cleodelinda, you awaken things in me that I've forgotten.
Oh, George, I do love you.
Sire, if I save your daughter, may I marry her?
Oh, yes, of course.
No!
It is usual.
I don't want it!
He's a champion, Cleodelinda.
He'll lose. He's not as strong as I am, even. Are you courting death, Sir Knight?
Like you?
Oh?
You understand me?
We'd make a good pair, would we?
But are you courting death?
No! I adore life!
Love ye one another. Oh, one another.
Come down, and let's face the dragon!
We know what happened then. It's getting close in this cathedral.
You've no idea what happened then.
No?
I'm telling you the story.
Right.
Cleodelinda came down in the morning sun without her clothes on, and no one was about, as had been arranged. The whole white city was silent. She passed George, all strapped up in mail and armour, carrying his spear and his sword and his great banner like some decorated railway engine topped by a little blonde head.
You're beautiful, Cleodelinda.
They went down a sandy path to the dry grass of the dunes. And out of the desert came the filthy, defecating dragon, the most disgusting sight in the known world. The unloved always look disgusting, you know.
It's huge! Leather wings 30 feet across and slobber! Oh.
There's fire, but so much slobber! Why doesn't it put itself out? It could glue everything together in that smelly jelly and suffocate the world.
There were great curling shapes, like you see in the pictures, only they weren't flames. They were ropes of this stuff with its dull smell of stale leaves, which shot out from him and then swirled back again. The fire was there, certainly. You could feel the heat. The dragon somehow turned it on and off, allowing blasts to burst forward and then checking them. Finally, it circled back and landed with a noise like a million iron plates being shuffled.
Look at its claws, like great cones, pitted and filthy. It's horrible, helpless, dangerous, angry. A dripping, burning, stinking mess. No wonder all the maidens are afraid of it, wobbling around, unthinking, knocking things over. You thing! You're graceless, inelegant, consuming, gulping. I'm running out of adjectives, but I hate you so much. I feel an anger just like yours, and in addition, scorn and condescension. You're no myth. You're a fact.
I'm hungry.
I hate you for being so much that. And I hate the job I have of getting rid of you.
Why?
Because the knowledge that I am a licensed killer fills me with an awful sadness.
There's no sadness here for me.
No?
Only glory.
Claire Delinda stood very coolly in the sand, naked and lovely. It was all a million years away from the time George loved Alison. His anger at that, at being removed. It was in rage for loss of Alison that he rode forward and shouted,
"All right, then. I've come to kill you."
"I've been cheated. I shall have the jail and the city."
George and the dragon now began a dreadful dance below the little mound of sand Cleodelinda stood on. The dragon went left a few steps, and George went right a few steps on his horse. As they moved, they gazed at each other, like partners, and then, surprisingly, paused to whisper.
"This is all we know, you and I."
"What is?"
"This dance of death. We're active now, together."
"I know other things."
"You knew other things."
"Did you?"
"No, but I've met men like you and danced with them. They said they knew things once. They were sad, and I ate them."
"Sadness makes some of us angry, and I am overwhelmingly angry to be sad."
"I was angry to be sad once. Now I'm just angry. It's much less painful."
"I'm still sad, and I know I'm sad, and that's my strength. There!"
"Oh, you're killing me! He's nearly dead, and there'll be nothing left for me. My friends, my lover, my parents, they'll only know me through my sacrifice."
"I know you, Cleodelinda. I also love you. You don't have to make a sacrifice now."
"I must do something. I'm not worthless."
"You're beautiful."
"I'm actual."
"All right. Here, take this belt and put it around the creature's neck and lead it into the city. Then everyone will know you, and you'll still be alive, and we'll be married."
"Oh, humiliation!"
"Yes."
"You instead of me?"
"Humiliation is the deepest cruelty."
"I know that very well." "Oh, you funny little thing."
"Don't laugh, Cleodelinda."
"Why not?"
"Don't laugh. It spoils you utterly."
And so they went back to the city, leading the poor dragon like a little rat-faced pet. And all his slobber dried up.
I wish the girl hadn't laughed. It made her body go hard.
"Ah, wonderful! Quite wonderful! Is there anything special we might do for him, besides the wedding?"
"He's a Christian. A notable conversion might be in order. Yourself, sir?"
"Yes, of course. Except Rome might just send in the army."
"I never knew love could be so peaceful."
"Oh, it is. I remember."
"What?"
"And I know what you're thinking. Why do we have to go through the messy bit to reach the quiet upland?"
"But I like the touch of you."
"It's the presence."
"The body, you mean?"
"No, the presence."
"Well, I do love you anyway, George."
"Yes, I love you, but you laughed at the dragon, and I can't forget that. I want no humiliation and no death."
So the dragon was sex?
"Of course it wasn't. It was unloved. We'll go out to the islands soon, because it's cool there. So different from George's story.
Tell me the end first.
It's awful.
My people, not only do I give Cleodolinda to George, I also announce that I and my family are now committed to Christianity. The Queen and I are delighted, aren't we?
Sweet goodness, come to us.
The Romans, they're coming to persecute us.
I'm trained to fight them.
Let's hide.
Don't you want to sacrifice yourself?
I'm starting to want the touch of your skin in all my daily life. I don't seem to see the joy of sacrifice as I did.
How unfair. You have what I once had, and I begin to have only the love of other people that so consumed you when we met.
You don't love me?
I love humanity, and I'm a Christian. You fit there somewhere, quite high up. But with it all, there is this drenching sadness suddenly. Someone somewhere has to stop the arrogant killing. I fear we're going to need more martyrs, and that means me dying for, dare I say it, love.
You don't love me.
I love, how can I put it, with you. Oh, lay down your arms and die for Jesus, George. You knew he'd get you in the end and lead you to his life hereafter.
I'm Dacian, satrap of Egypt, and Diocletian, sweet fellow, has sent me to clear things up. Are you the vizier?
Sire.
Lovely. This is my man, the enchanter Avroclitus.
Good morning.
And we're purging Christianity. Can we have the execution of the leader, George, is it?
Ah.
Killed your dragon?
Well.
And many young soldiers of the Empire doing their duty in Cappadocia?
I am the ruler of Cyllene.
Christians don't rule anywhere, old chum. Let's have George, shall we? Is this him, the pale-faced lad?
I know your face.
Really?
It's all too common. I have this unexciting duty to proclaim your pagan gods of war and death are devils.
What do you say to that, Avroclitus?
We put it to a simple scientific test.
That's torture, George.
I know.
Why don't you get angry?
If I fought, I should destroy the human presence just as much as they do. It's the glorious present tense that people kill when they kill each other, and without the present tense, there's nothing. I lost my present tense. I took revenge. Perhaps I'll get it back if I become a martyr for the god of more or less, though not exactly, love.
We'll start with the first experiment, which is to tie George to a cross and scrape his skin off with metal combs. A fairly standard test for religious authenticity. And if he manages to stop the skin coming off, well,
we'll watch, shall we?
They did it, and of course the skin did come off.
Oh, God.
You see why I like these islands? The white houses, the low rocks, the trees, the tideless sea.
Finish the story.
Yes. Well, his real problem was that he didn't scream.
This isn't passing time pleasantly, Avroclitus.
I don't understand.
I love you, George.
I've explained about that.
The draught of poison is the next thing. Are you thirsty?
Yes.
Try this. 3 seconds, normally. No pain.
I'm too depressed and full of insight to feel pain. Oh. The whole human condition has been reduced by you, so there's nothing else I can feel.
This man has knowledge I don't understand. Science drives me to ask him to explain Christianity.
I don't want complications, Avroclitus.
We've got them.
And you want to become a Christian?
Well, it's the only way to understand.
Off with his head!
But in the interests of science...
You see, casual killing is worse than any pain. I shan't die for ages, I'm afraid.
They'll get more vicious as they lose their self-control.
Let's nail him to a table and do awful things. Yeah.
They did that to St. George?
And then they threw him into prison.
Thank you, Jaina.
Don't worry, sir. You're winning.
I don't think I'm winning.
Perhaps you should, George. Perhaps we both should.
Holy Mother, how soothing.
I've simply come to say there's nothing I can do about your situation. The men responsible are fools. That's the only real fact here. Cruelty is done by fools. I know it bitterly, you know it bitterly. The fools never find out. That's the bitterest thing of all, because it means there's nothing we can do to change their minds.
They aren't just fools, surely.
Oh, yes. And what will not be noticed from your story, my fault, is that you'll die, as you said, overwhelmed by sadness that this filthy foolishness exists, and exists as a monstrous waste of the only thing we have, our lives, our lovely lives, our lives on Earth. The fools don't see.
Isn't there a life hereafter?
Oh, yes, but only for those who value this one. I'm afraid most people will think of you as a hero, not as a martyr for the love of life. I should have complained to someone about that. What's next, jailer?
It's the double wheel with spikes.
Alison got married, George. But your real mother's still dreadfully proud of you.
Oh, good.
Why won't he scream?
Because there isn't any point.
The Roman Empire requires screams. Get the sword, start on his crotch.
Odysseus!
Yeah?
As the one-time king and queen of these parts, my wife and I would very much like to change our minds about Christianity. And if that pleases
you... Yes, all right.
Thank you.
Sweet goodness, come to us.
What's wrong with him? He's healing instantly.
He's too depressed to die, and he believes so strongly in the here and now that he can't. Even though he wants to.
Don't be intellectual with me, miss. Throw him into the boiling lead.
What does all this mean to you, Dacian?
Not much. I've seen far better at the Coliseum.
I meant life and death.
Getting heavy, are we?
Oh, come on!
If there aren't any laughs in life, George, there certainly won't be any when we're dead. So I'm not interested in all this privileged behavior. Just change your mind and let's go and have a drink.
No!
Scream?
No!
Couldn't you pray to one of my idols?
And at that moment, forgotten about till now, and reduced to little more than a pet snake, the dragon spoke.
For my sake, lose your temper just once.
Why should I?
Well, you gave up violence after you'd humbled me completely. Made you feel good, I expect.
Better than when I was killing things.
Dacian won't ever give up violence. Does it make you feel good, thinking of the victims he'll do this to in the future?
You're trying to make me kill him. I won't. The killing has to stop.
But you're prolonging it, George. Think of all those others as yet quite unaware of what will happen to them.
When people think of me, they'll say, oh, I ought to stop killing things like he did. And then...
They'll think of how you slaughtered me.
The Holy Mother said that, actually. Oh, what a moment to find oneself with doubts.
No need for doubts. Call on your old Jehovah God to take that man away.
Would he do it painlessly?
I'm sure.
It is a solution. I'm tempted. All right, Dacian. A short prayer to the one with the dog's head.
George!
I'm feeling a huge peevishness, not great and red, but snarling, caught in a double bind. I'll pray to old Jehovah for relief.
Which one is Jehovah?
Great God of the Sinai Desert, God who created heaven and earth and even thought of justice, God who smote hip and thigh and drowned his whole creation.
What's this about?
I ask for fire! I ask for thunder! I ask for the removal of this dried-out stick of humanity who doesn't recognize the sheer beauty that's contained in him. That's more than I meant, really.
It's a trick! Drag him through the streets naked! We aren't frightened of a perfectly normal thunderstorm! Get the woman! No! Leave her alone, then! Shit, I'm in this deeper than I thought! Execute him! Cut his head off! Go kill him now!
Damn it, dragon, he's still alive! I'm even more depressed than I was before.
Kill!
Yes, do! Goodbye, Cleodolinda!
I don't want any tricks! Good heavens, he looks better than he did when we started!
He knows the truth of being a person, a present human being, which you pervert, Dacian.
No one calls me that! Kill him! There! Dead! No longer present.
Come on, Jehovah, one last time before the God of love humiliates you as well. Take revenge!
there we are then. Take George's body away and bury it modestly. The bodies of Dacian and the Romans have been burnt, so put them on the field where they can be useful at last.
Oh, George. We would have learnt so much together if you'd lived.
The last word came from the dragon, who spoke it over George's grave to Cleodelinda.
I am a fact. The envious. The never laughing. The never grateful. Real life, as the truly timid call it. Until I pass away from people's minds completely, I'll haunt the world's arrangements. If there were no dragon, there'd be no Dacian and no Romans, because the world would have learned how to make things go another way. But until that happens, I, the great, unnoticed, born and grown in a desert without care, will affect all the customs of mankind. And everybody will go on saying, ah! It's just a fact. You can't change it.
Until that happens, till dragons wither away?
All I knew about St. George was the mercenaries stabbing away at the unconscious. Why have you told me this?
I knew from how you moved there was a chance at least you'd try to understand the problem.
May I join you for a few days to do that?
And learn to smile? And somehow know about your presence?
And you learn about yours?
Yes. You're so graceful.
In What Happened with St. George by David Cregan, Ian Holm was the man and Kate Harper the woman. Peter Davison and Kenneth Cranham were George and the Dragon, Mary Wimbush, the Blessed Virgin Mary, Christopher Benjamin, the King, Jennifer Piercy, the Queen, and Holly de Jong, Cleodelinda, with Amanda Root as Alison. Other parts were played by Eric Allen, Brett Usher, Mark Straker, Terence Edmund, Sean Arnold, and Peter Penry-Jones. What Happened with St. George was directed in our World Service Studios by David Hitchinson.